Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Diana Catherine Plopa. I'm the Associate Publisher of Grey Wolf Publishing, and today we have the distinct pleasure of speaking with Vivian McNerney. She is the author of Water Damage. It's a novel of liquid mystery, which I will certainly ask Vivian about that subtitle in just a moment. Vivian, welcome to the program today.
Thank you very much. Excited to be here. Thanks for asking me.
Sure. I'm very intrigued about that subtitle, A Novel of Liquid Mystery. How did you come up with that? And without giving too much away about the book itself, how does that subtitle work with the story?
Well, partly because the book is set in Bath, England, which is a town built on water. Bath was built in, mainly in the 1700s, but it's built on Roman ruins of hot spa, old Roman baths. So there's this sort of fluid feel to it, and it's also on the River Avon. And also because it's England, it rains all the time. So okay. I have this notion of everything being really liquid and watery, and then the character herself is sort of an unformed. She's not quite a woman yet. Oh, that sounded like a Britney Spears song. But she is still very young. So she's not formed. So she's very fluid. And then there's a slight mystery throughout the novel. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not like a true mystery.
Right. I like that connection that you made in the subtitle for the character and the story itself. And like I say, it intrigued me, and I went on to Amazon and looked at the Kindle page, and I read the excerpt that's posted there, and I am very interested in adding this to my TBR pile.
Oh, great. Thank you. Wonderful.
Yeah, I read the beginning, and I was just so taken with how you start the piece with first-person experience of enduring cancer. Where did you get that idea?
Fortunately, it's not a personal experience. But I did have, like a lot of writers, had childhood trauma. And I remember how I felt kind of alone in the world going through that. And so I wanted to create two characters who have that experience. They both had this sort of childhood trauma. They feel alone in the world, and one thrives with it, and the other is very cautious and kind of tiptoes into experiences. But like I said, not a personal experience with cancer.
Okay. Well, you could have fooled me, because when I started reading it and I found that it was in first person, my heart sank, and I thought, oh, do I have to have this conversation with Vivian? How sad. So I'm very happy to hear that it's not first-person account.
No, it's not. It's not.
Okay. The other thing that I noticed that this, I don't know what you're going to read today, but I must say in that first section in the pie shop when the two characters meet for the first time, I found that scene to be very compelling. The juxtaposition between the two characters. You did a marvelous job of really showcasing their differences in the most subtle ways. It was just very striking to me. I think you did an excellent job with that.
Oh, good. I am so sorry. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to find that easily. I was going to just read the first page, which is kind of the sad part. But at least I think it sort of introduces kind of what the story's about a bit. But,
okay, the piece on Amazon starts with the chapter Fish Out of Water. So,
let me see.
It looks like from the table of contents that's the beginning of the book. So so that we can give some context to our listeners, I don't know, is that actually the beginning of the book?
If it starts with the scene in the coffee shop, it's not. I got to
say
this. Sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. This, what I saw was it started with the scene with mom and and Diane sitting on their bed together when she was just a preteen. That's where it starts.
Yes.
But later we get to the pie shop, and I love that scene. That was fantastic.
Okay.
So,
okay. Well, now you're really pressuring me because I so want to read that scene. I'm looking for it.
So I want you to have time to read the scene that you want to read.
Okay.
And then if we have extra time, then maybe you can read a second scene for us. But I'd like you to read the scene of your choice first, and then we'll chat about it a little bit. So why don't you kind of give a preface of the scene you're going to read for our listeners, and then go right in with your reading.
I found the spot that you said, so I'm going to try it. So
okay.
I think I want to preface it by saying, I'm going to start with page one, then I will jump to the bit you like. So
okay.
Here's the start of it. Art saved my life. Then it almost killed me. Finally, we called it a draw. The summer I turned 13, I felt tired all the time. My mom figured it was pre-puberty stuff. She sat on my bed, patted my leg beneath the pink floral blanket, and said, "Your body needs time to rest and grow into womanhood." I was the first of four daughters, so mom hadn't quite perfected the talk. Grow into womanhood was code for getting my period, which I already had 3 months earlier during gym class. I bought what I needed for nickels from the vending machine at school and never told her. It was my one and only period. Instead of growing into womanhood that summer, I grew smaller, thinner anyway. And by September, when I couldn't rise with the alarm clock to tackle the first day of seventh grade, mom and dad finally realized my need for sleep might be more serious. So they took me to the doctor. They suspected mono. The diagnosis was leukemia. Okay, I guess we just kind of talked about that. So the spoiler alert, she doesn't die.
Which is great. Because if she did, the whole book would be really sad.
It would be. And the whole point of the book is that it was setting her up as kind of an orphan, emotional orphan. She's had this sickness that has, you know, kind of destroyed her family, separated her parents. And then she ends up going to a therapist through the hospital. She's still a teenager. And the therapist, the psychiatrist, knows of another young woman her age who has gone through trauma. And both these girls just need to get out of their homes. Their home lives are just not healthy for them. So the psychiatrist helps these two girls get together as emancipated minors and move in together. And then they end up going to England. So that's kind of the setup. So it's these two girls who kind of don't know what they're doing in life, but are about to go off on this great adventure. That's the premise.
It's wonderful. Let me ask you, where did you get the idea? This is a really highly fueled, dramatic story. What was the impetus for you to write this story?
You know, there are a couple things. One is that I was a journalist for many years and would hear these different stories as a journalist. And I had heard this story of these two emancipated minors who ended up being put together. And I just was struck by that, you know, just that somebody intervened and did that for them and what that would mean and what kind of person the kids would be. And then the other thing was I did travel a lot when I was young, when I was 18. And I think traveling at that age, maybe not so much now, but back then in the 70s, traveling around was such a big deal. Everything was different. You know, I grew up in the Midwest with this like white bread and bologna background. And I never had good food until I went to Italy. No offense, Mom, but it's true. So I didn't have good food until Italy. I mean, I grew up in the Catholic Church, so I had a lot of that. You know, ornate churches and all of that, but still the architecture of Europe blew me away. And I wanted to create that sense, which is why I said it in the 70s, because I really don't know that travel has that same impact now, because we've all seen everything, and you can get good coffee everywhere, and you can,
of course,
you know,
sure,
it's
yeah.
Yeah, so I wanted to set it back in that time where these new experiences could really shake you to the core and shape who you were. So that
yeah,
was part of it.
I find that to be just a fascinating idea to drop a story in a past that we know and just
yes.
tweak it a little bit to give us a new adventure. That's a wonderful approach to writing.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that I was really interested in, and this may be my Catholic background, but I have found that every story that really spoke to me, that just like grabbed me and stayed with me for generations, starting from like in third grade when I had a Catholic priest who read to us the Hans Christian Andersen stories, and the priest
oh, yeah?
was actually, he was from Denmark and he had this thick accent. And he read The Little Mermaid, which is an absolute tragic tale. It's nothing
oh, yeah.
like what
the
Disney
original.
Presented.
Yeah,
yeah,
Disney, I don't know what they did.
Yeah, they messed it up. They did away with the whole thing, which was she goes through an incredible ethical dilemma. That was my point.
Right.
Every story I loved, they go through this ethical dilemma. And it's not an easy decision for them. It's not like, I'm good, you know. And hers was, you know, all she has to do is kill the prince and she can live forever. And instead, she won't allow herself to do that. So, you
right.
know, every story, if you think of it, that for me, those are the ones that stayed with me from Holden and Catcher in the Rye and Scout and
oh,
Kill a Mockingbird,
right.
on and on and on. So
yeah.
I have to admit, I like intentionally set out to try to create that where a character is faced with ethical dilemmas and will she rise to the occasion or, you know, succumb to the easier route that will maybe enrich her in some way. Excuse me.
Yeah. From the little bit that I've read so far, I think you have captured the essence of that struggle very well. Even just in the first few pages, I definitely got a sense of that. So as I say, this is a new book for my TBR pile that is now looking more and more like the Tower of Pisa. So
well,
I promise you I will get to finish it, but it may not be tomorrow.
That's fine. I'm very honored that you're reading it. And I actually hate
Absolutely.
When people say they're honored, but honestly, it feels really good. Thank you.
It does, doesn't it? I mean, as an author myself, it just feels wonderful to hear that somebody is even mildly interested in reading your work.
Exactly, because you put so much of yourself into it. I will admit, I wrote a novel years ago, it was a novel I like, you know, slit my arms and bled all over the paper. It was my
right.
everything, you know. And
right.
I landed an amazing agent in New York, and she loved the book, and her assistant loved the book, and everything was, you know, all systems go. She was sending it out to great publishers, and then it didn't sell. And and she was like, I'm sorry, I hit all the people that I send to. She didn't send stuff blindly. And
right.
And it was really, honestly, it was pretty devastating. And I didn't even allow myself to realize that. I just thought, oh, well, you know, I tried.
Yeah.
And so
well,
all
you know,
years
being,
later.
Being
ahead,
in the publishing
sorry.
Business, it's a fickle thing, you know. It doesn't, the publishing industry is not something that you can count on. It's different.
Yeah.
Even if you've got somebody who's a New York Times bestselling author, every book is not necessarily a home run, you know?
Right,
so
right.
That mitigating rejection is one of those tasks that we as authors have to manage, you know?
Yeah, why I chose this one, I'm such a wimp and hate being rejected, I don't know. but I think it's true of a lot of writers, you know, we hate that. And yet there's this, you feel compelled to put yourself out there. And,
yeah,
and
I,
as a journalist.
I just, yeah, and as a journalist, it's the same issue.
Yeah, I mean, you write something, your byline is out there, and at some point you start relaxing and you think, okay, you know, I've got this, I'm doing these stories, and you're really focused on your subject and everything's cool. And then you make a mistake and there it is for all the world to see. And then I write back in like, holy, you know, panic mode. So,
yeah, I remember as a child, my father gave me a great lesson about rejection. And he said, you know, just think of it as, you know, this is a key that doesn't fit your lock and move on to the next key. So I was very fortunate to have that approach to rejection, is that it's not a personal failing. It's just not a good fit.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Good so, thing to remember. Yeah, so Water Damage is your second novel then?
Well, it's kind of. I mean, the other one is tucked away in a drawer, so I'm not sure if it counts. I went through the process
of writing. So this is officially your debut novel. Do you have anything else in the works coming up?
I do. I have, I'm working on a second novel, another novel, I should say. And I also am working on a memoir about that trip that I did when I was young, when I was 18. Yeah, I went to Europe first with a girlfriend, and I should back it up by saying I came from a very blue-collar background. The dads on my block worked as, you know, on shipping docks and roofers and gas meter readers. I mean, it was a pretty blue-collar background. I had never traveled. And I saved up every penny I earned at the mall and bought a ticket to Europe with a girlfriend. And then I ended up traveling overland through Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, Nepal, Bangladesh, I mean, kind of everywhere.
You were very brave.
I was stupid, I have to say. It had much more to do with stupidity than bravery, because I wish I could say I was exaggerating, but I swear I got to Istanbul, and that was the first I realized, oh, this is Constantinople. I remember reading about that, you know. It was like, I didn't know where I was in the world, literally.
Well, how wonderful that you had that experience before it became a death sentence, nearly, you know.
Well, it would be. You have to be, right now you kind of have to be willing to kill someone to go there. I mean,
or take the risk of you losing your life to go there, which is just as traumatic.
Yes.
So how wonderful for you that in your early life you got to take this adventure. And
yes,
I'm sure
I'm sure that
experience absolutely fuels your writing.
Absolutely. It was that idea of just life as just, I wanted to live big. You know, I just felt like I saw what my life, what the expectations were in my neighborhood. And it's not like it was grim at all. It's a very, very pleasant neighborhood. Still is.
Sure.
My parents still live there. But you know, all the kids that I grew up with, like half were planning on getting full-time jobs after school, and half were planning to go to the University of Minnesota, but they were going to, most of my friends lived in their parents' basement and, you know, went to school downtown part-time because none of us had enough money to just, like, go off to college.
So, yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, and the idea of doing that to me was so depressing that I just knew that I, you know, it's not what I wanted to do. And I'm not trying to be coy, but like I lost a brother when I was 13, and also this realization that, you know, life can be short. You don't know. There are no guarantees. And
right.
I just wanted to live as big as I could.
Right. So who would you say are your, top three literary influences?
Boy, that's a tough one. I think some of the books I mentioned, I mean, I can remember the first book the first stories that hooked me were Hans Christian Andersen. The first couple books that just really hooked me were The Outsiders, which was written by a 16-year-old girl, which was really startling at the time. And I just loved the mood of that book. And I have not read it since, and I hope it holds up, but I loved that book. And then I think that same year we read Great Expectations. And I absolutely love Dickens to this day. I don't understand when people don't like it. I just think the writing is beautiful and the characters are fascinating. So I loved Dickens. And then, the Usual Suspects. Ken Kesey was a huge influence. I live in Oregon now. And Kesey's book, Sometimes a Great Notion, was one of the books that was kind of passed around when I was on the road traveling like that. There was no internet, so people passed paper books around, paperback books. Right. And that was how I stumbled upon Sometimes a Great Notion. And I loved it. I had never read anything like it. It's pretty abstract in the beginning where you're sort of inside the head of the character. And anyway, so lots of different writers, I guess.
Nice. I noticed that on Amazon, Water Damage is available for Kindle. Personally, as a reader, do you have a preference, print or electronic?
I hate to admit I'm old-fashioned. I still prefer print. I have it all. I have a Kindle. I have a AirBook. I can read on all these things. I have a iPad. But I tend to read print. I still buy it. I still like the feel of it. But I'm trying to get better at then, like, recycling it because I have more books than I can live with. And I'm really working at like getting rid of them instead of, because I'm never going to reread them. You know, how many novels do you reread? Nothing.
I saw a meme on Facebook recently that said, it's not hoarding if it's books.
Yeah, there is something to that. I do have, it's sort of littered around the house and have an office that is lined on three walls with books, and they are beautiful. I do like it, but time to let those things go.
I grew up in our family home. We had bookshelves on three walls as a family room, and that was great. And we did weekly trips to the library as a family. It was
that,
like a tradition that we did. It was fabulous. So no great shock when my family learned that I wanted to be an author. So.
Oh, that's nice. Well, same in my family, there are actually a few. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's all right. So I know there's a little bit of lag time between us because you're on the West Coast. Can you tell me just real quickly before we get ready to wrap up, how can authors or how can readers find you? Do you have any upcoming events that you're going to be at?
Right now, I don't have any events. I write on a website that has been really successful for me, which is called Ello. It's like hello without the H. And unlike most social media, it's not really about what you've done today and all that. It tends to focus on what people have created. So there are a lot of photographers, artists, writers on it. And I'm happy with that. So I hope people will find me on that. I share a lot of writing and have more than 17,000 people following me on that.
Wow. That's quite the Pied Piper of Hamelin kind of scenario there.
Yeah, I'm happy with it. Ello has been a great space for me. I've tried them all, and Ello's the one that's really worked for me.
So it's ELLO.com?
It's actually ELLO.co, C-O. I have no idea why.
Okay. How can people find you on Twitter?
I'm at Vivian Mack, M-A-C.
Okay. And do you have a Facebook page as well?
Personal one, same thing. My full name, Vivian. I have a difficult name, so if people can find my name, they can kind of find everything else.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so... social media has become so much a part of our connectivity now, it's really quite a surprise.
Well, and the funny thing is, before having a difficult name, or a rare, unusual name like mine, both McInerney, the way it is spelled, and Vivian are not that common. And when I looked online once, I was the only Vivian McInerney I could find anywhere. There was like guy in Ireland. Yeah, it's like, okay. Who knew that having such a weird name might be useful?
Yeah, that's definitely beneficial as an author.
Yeah.
So when can we expect the next book? When do you think it'll be ready for public consumption?
I hope about 6 months. I'm often too optimistic, though. But in the memoir, like a lot of this stuff, what I do is take excerpts and try to get them published. So the memoir has had a few pieces published in literary sites and magazines, and same with the other book. So I highly recommend that to anybody writing. If you can get pieces of it, you know, you usually have to rewrite it so that it has a definite beginning, middle, and end. But if you can then send those out, it helps in looking for a publisher. You can say, well, these excerpts have been printed.
Right. That's exactly why Grey Wolf Publishing offers the opportunity for writers to submit to our 6 community service anthologies every year. We do 6
which
books.
I did.
Where the, yes. And the proceeds go to serve charity, which we think is a win-win. Not only does the author get to build their writing resume, but we also get to serve a worthy charity. So, you know, we do it completely altruistically to help both the charities and the authors. So I know that you have submitted, and I would love to see more work from you.
Yeah, thank you. It does work, I will say. I tell everyone when I'm sending stuff out that I had a short story, and that short story came directly out of a novel. So, yeah. So it is very helpful to writers.
Sure. And you know, we love it because we don't ask writers to pay an entry fee. And although we don't pay royalties because all the proceeds go to serve a charity, it is a great way to get your name out there and to build up your writer's platform. So, as I say, we really appreciate that you contributed to Write to Wolf, and we hope to see more work from you for our upcoming anthologies as well.
Thank you. Thank you.
So we're going to be wrapping up here in just a minute. Is there a last parting shot you'd like to throw across the bow for our listeners? Some word of wisdom you'd like to offer?
Only that I wish I had read something more upbeat so that people would go, yes, just want them to know the book that I wrote is not sad. It's really an adventure, and I hope that people will read it and review it. That's my big hope. It is with publishers now. I mean, being considered by publishers, publisher. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
So I'm so pleased that you took the time to have this little chat with us. We really appreciate you taking time out of your incredibly busy schedule. Every moment away from writing is a gift, so we appreciate you giving us that gift.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you. I really appreciated doing it.
Great. I'm glad you had fun. We're getting ready to wrap up. Anyone who wants to listen to the archive, it'll be available Friday morning on our Blog Talk Radio program station. You can go to graywolfpublishing.com and look for the On the Air tab, and that'll take you right to our archive list. Again, Vivian, thank you so much for joining us, and I wish you all the best success in your writing.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye.